And what the golden rule that I was taught a long time ago that I think is a great way to think of diversification, if you're adding something new to your portfolio, if it doesn't do one of two things, you probably shouldn't add it. If it doesn't increase returns or lower risk, you probably shouldn't add it.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Well, on today's episode of the Retirement Cafe, we're going to discuss diversification. You know, people talk all the time about it, but do most investors really understand diversification or know the impact of true diversification on their portfolio? There are some well-respected financial gurus that say, just buy the S&P 500 index and forget everything else. Well, is that actually the way you should approach it? Today, we're going to jump into that question and many, many others. And this should be a very good episode for those wondering just exactly what is the impact of diversification on your portfolio. So welcome in, Dan and Brent. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Great.
Very good.
Looking forward to this topic.
Yeah, I think this is going to be fun.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a great topic too. You know, this is it seems to be a cornerstone of good investing, right? Diversification. But it is misunderstood because, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, I'll just buy a lot of different stuff and I'm good. Rather, you know, it's about diversifying appropriately, right? And properly. So let's just start out with the basics and talk a little bit about, you know, what diversification is and why it's important.
Yeah, I think my favorite saying goes back to when you were a kid, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Right.
I mean, right. I think that's the thing that people struggle with somehow, because the reality is like, if you look at investing today, most people invest in mutual funds, wouldn't you say? I mean, the majority of people.
Oh, yeah, most people, I think.
And it's hard to know, like, even if what you even own.
Oh, the titles of them are, I mean, they're, and I think so some of the titles don't even really represent, obviously, what's truly inside of it. And so you need to make sure you have an understanding of, like, is this a U.S. fund? Is this a international fund? You know, I mean, that's one way to diversify, right?
Yeah.
You have to have both. By industry is certainly important. Sizes of companies.
Yeah. Yeah. You start looking at a lot of those different factors, value versus growth, like, yeah, where companies are. You know, there's a lot of things that go into play with what diversification is, with the core idea just being, hey, don't own too much of the same stuff, right?
Right.
Because it's just like, you know, if you do that, you can have some tough times in the market. And we want to make sure that you're investing in a way that's going to avoid that as much as possible and have the best possible returns over long periods of time. And the other thing with diversification, I think, is important to note, that also means like stocks versus fixed income, right? Or alternatives. And, you know, how much of each of those do you own, which we'll get into a little more. And what the golden rule that I was taught a long time ago that I think is a great way to think of diversification, if you're adding something new to your portfolio, if it doesn't do one of two things, you probably shouldn't add it. If it doesn't increase returns or lower risk, you probably shouldn't add it, right? So that's a good point to start with. We'll talk about what it's not, which a lot of people think about diversification.
Well, it's not just owning a bunch of stuff,
right?
So like, I have 8 mutual funds, I'm diversified. We've seen what the results of that are. We'll run analysis on it fairly often for people that we begin working with. And a lot of times, as Dan was talking about earlier, they'll have, you know, this mutual fund and that mutual fund, all these different mutual funds. And then when we look at it, they all have the same stuff inside it. So it's not just about owning a bunch of funds. It's about, you have to make sure that what's inside those are different.
Yeah. I mean, it's like having a bunch of boxes with all them loaded the same thing. I mean, it's just like, okay, yeah, you got a lot of boxes in here. That doesn't mean you're diversified, right? Or if you sell just umbrellas, and if it's sunny out, you got nothing to sell.
That's
you got to
right.
have that suntan lotion too, right?
Right.
So, and the other thing I think about too is some people think of diversification totally differently, where they think of it, oh, well, this is my gambling money and this is my safer money, right? That to me isn't really a good way to think from an investment standpoint, right? Where they set aside money where they really do very unreasonable things to try to like hit it rich.
Right. I think it's just better. And I mean, this is what we believe is just having everything working towards a common goal. Well, if you're just trying to hit it rich over here, that's pretty hard to plan around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my Bitcoin and my GameStop and my, you know, anything that might be hot that day. Yeah. This is my, you know, my basically aggressive part, when really it's totally gambling.
Right.
So it's not necessarily going to get you where you want to go with any kind of certainty.
Yeah, no question. And I mentioned it earlier, but you know, a lot of people do say, you know, owning the S&P 500 is enough. That's going to give you enough diversification. But I'm kind of curious where you stand on that. I guess first, kind of give me a little explanation of what the S&P 500 is for any of those that aren't completely clear on that. And I guess, can you answer whether or not you think it's diversified enough?
Yeah, it's funny too. Like my dad said to me the other day, hey, I'm watching the news and, well, you know, there's three little things. You know, of course, it's the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ. Mm-hmm. So what are, you know, I know what the Dow is. What are these other ones? So I think it is good to spend just a minute explaining what is the S&P 500, right? So what's your best explanation of that?
It's basically U.S. large companies, right? 500 approximately. Mm-hmm. It's a cap-weighted index. So it's grouping all of those 500-ish companies together, right? And what the cap-weighted means is that the bigger companies weigh in more towards that index than the rest of them.
Yeah, which I think that is a really important point. I want to just kind of repeat what he just said. So it's like Apple's a really big company, right? So what you're saying is that that would be a bigger percentage of the S&P 500 than some...
than the 500th company.
Yeah, that's right. Just small, whatever that right?
Yeah, so it's based on the percentage. So if Apple has a really good day or a really bad day, that's going to impact the S&P 500.
More.
Much more than one of the smaller companies in the S&P 500.
Yeah, and that's the way it's generally represented. There is something called an equal weighted, right, where they're all the same mm-hmm. weighting across, but that's not used very often whatsoever.
And that's not what you're seeing when you are watching TV.
Right, that's not what's on there at all. And I think that's really, really a good point to understand. The question about, is it diversified? So, you know, I think you could say it's somewhat diversified, right? Because within those 500 companies, it does, you can check off the box of industries, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's across, because it's a lot of different companies, so you're hitting some different industries. You have some value and some growth. It's more growth than core type companies, but there's some of that, right?
Yeah.
There's no fixed income, obviously. Right. It's all stocks, 100%.
And then internationally, there's...
Very little
representation there. And so it's a way of diversifying U.S. large companies.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think of it. So it's probably better off than going and just trying to buy your own large U.S. companies. It's easier. It's really inexpensive. You can buy that. But a couple things that I found interesting when I looked a little deeper into the S&P 500. So if you look at the top 10 stocks, and this goes to that cap weighting in the S&P 500, that actually makes up 27% of the holdings. That's a big number.
Yeah, that is a big number.
So over a quarter of your return is in 10 stocks. In the most recent ones I had, just so you kind of know what those are, like you've heard of, I'm sure you've heard of all of them. Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Alphabet, which is Google, Tesla, Berkshire Hathaway, which is our buddy Warren Buffett's company, JP Morgan, Johnson & Johnson, right?
Yeah.
Although Johnson & Johnson probably took a little hit there with the... with the issue with the vaccine, but... you guys get the point. That's, to me, not overly, you know, diversified.
No, and as you mentioned, I mean, there's quite a few different industries there. Tech, obviously, but then you have pharmaceutical, you had automotive.
I think one of the things you're seeing, though, that's interesting in those top 10 holdings, that's very reflective of what's happening in the economy currently. So with COVID, that big run-up in the tech companies had a big impact. Yeah. Where they took over a bigger percentage of the S&P 500, which can hurt long-term diversification. Well, just so you know, just so you kind of have comparison, what should it be? What should my top 10 holdings be? So if you look at that, what did you see on that, Brent?
Well, a globally diversified portfolio has versus 27%, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Is only 6% of the top 10 holdings. It's not as concentrated, obviously, when you globally diversify. And that's just because there's so many more companies.
Yeah, right? a lot more diversification because you're spreading it across not just the U.S., right, but non-U.S. companies, emerging markets, all around the world, right? And so, like, I actually did a quick look on this. A typical globally diversified portfolio has about 13,500 holdings, different companies, where the S&P has what? About 500, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you're much less dependent on any one company. And so from our perspective, that feels better, you know? And then, of course, there's no fixed income in either of those numbers. But if you want to start reducing risk from a diversification standpoint, that percent that you have in stock versus what you have in fixed income being cash, treasuries, bonds, safe money, you know, is going to really drive how much up and down you have in your portfolio or how big that window of returns. So that's the other big piece to diversification.
Well, the S&P 500 might not be as diversified then as maybe you'd like ideally, but it seems like you'd eventually still get a pretty good return investing in it, right?
Well, I think the big question is what's eventually?
Yeah, eventually. I mean,
fair.
Yeah, I mean, how long is that period of time? Because certainly there's periods of time where that piece, U.S. large, is going to do really well or maybe better than some of the other pieces.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something, too. In a little while, we'll talk about some specific numbers. But here's the reality. Most parts of the market, if you will be very patient and disciplined over long periods of time, you're going to get a decent return, right? We don't know what. Yeah. We don't know what the best is going to be or the worst. And that's part of the reason you diversify, yeah. So you don't have to guess. But other things that I think are really important is if you're going through a stretch, so let's say you buy that S&P 500, like Bogle said with Vanguard, you know, like just buy the S&P. What if you go through that stretch like in the 2000s where you had a negative return for 10 years?
Yeah.
Is that going to push you out of that strategy because you just held something for 10 years and didn't get any, matter of fact, lost money?
Right.
I mean, will that affect you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's a great point is because you very well, if that's what you're doing and you go an extended period of time where you don't have a return, which is totally possible, as Dan just
talked
about.
For any asset class.
Yeah. Are you going to still stick with it? Because if you did stick with it, eventually you would have a pretty good return.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like in that example, if you would have stayed through the full 20 years, it was lower than like normal, you know, for a 20-year period, but it was still decent,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And so the other thing that I think is so important, are you taking distributions? So as we'll talk about in a little while, if you're taking distributions and if you're that believer in just the S&P 500, that can have a pretty negative effect in certain time frames, right?
Right, because if you have a portfolio or an account, right, that you're taking money out of, and it goes through a long period of time where it doesn't make any money, well, that's going to probably really impact your ability to take money out over a long period of time.
Yeah.
You're going to run out of money.
Yeah, more than likely.
You have to have growth in some, and that's where the diversification is so key in the distribution phase is that you likely are going to have some things that are growing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so the S&P 500, I get it, is not the best thing we own, right, in order for diversification. So let's talk about some ideas that will help people become better diversified in their portfolio.
Yeah, I think first of all, let's start realizing the U.S. isn't the only place to invest, right, friend?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we need to diversify globally to make sure, because we have this bias in the U.S. that we think that our stocks are the best, maybe some people do. And so we want to make sure that we're not buying into that. Like there's other parts of the world that at times outperform the U.S., right? I mean, that happens all the time.
Back to what we said earlier. So if you add something to the portfolio and it does one of two things, either increases returns or reduces your risk, that's a good thing, right? What do we know? When we add in international and emerging market stocks, it does that.
It does both.
Reduces risk and increases returns, right? So other things that are really positive is understanding the size of stocks, right? So most of the stocks you see, what we just talked about, the Googles and the Amazons, those are large company stocks. One thing we know from history is that over long periods of time, small companies tend to have a little bit higher return, right? And that's not always the case. You can go through 10 years here, 10 years there. That's not true. But over time, they tend to have a little higher return. That's something good to add in, right?
Yep.
Same thing with what are called value stocks. Pretty simply. Yep. So if you think back to Warren Buffett, we mentioned earlier. So Warren Buffett's a big believer in value stocks, which just means he tends to invest in companies that maybe aren't doing as well as other companies at a given time. That he feels like, hey, have room for improvement and can really grow.
Yeah, because they're trading at a discount, mm-hmm. right? And so I always like to think of it, you're buying something that's on sale, right?
Yep.
And so that's a good way to go. And you diversify, we're not saying no growth stocks,
right?
But we're saying we want to have growth and value stocks represented in our portfolio.
Yeah, like I think what we said earlier, so think about if your starting point is the U.S. large stocks. So remember, we started still with that S&P 500. So what can we add? You know, what can we spread it out a little more And as long as what we're adding is giving us a little higher return or lower risk, that's good.
Right.
So all the things we've talked about so far does not mean eliminating your U.S. large stocks. That's still a foundational piece. It's that when you spread it out a little more, you get a little better and better. And then finally, just that fixed income, right? So depending on how much risk you want to take and how big of a window of returns you're comfortable with, add in some fixed incomes to stabilize it, right? And as you do those things, Ben, I think overall what you can find is that you can greatly improve your risk and return just picture by just adding in more things that, you know, things that make sense, as we said.
Yeah, that's great. It's always some very good information you guys provide. And one thing that I also like that you do a lot of is you provide some good statistics to kind of back things up. And as we look at this kind of idea of getting more diversified and why it's so important, help me understand the difference between, especially when you look at returns, between diversification and someone that's not.
Yeah, we got some great software. I think it's kind of neat because we can look at many different portfolios, right, Brent?
Yeah.
And see like long run statistics. So how long, what was this one?
This one's about, 49 years, 50 years that we ran. We ran the S&P 500 against a well-diversified, globally diversified portfolio, and it had U.S., international, emerging markets, value, small, large companies, right?
So it's everything in there.
Very well-diversified portfolio.
Yeah, so that's really, really diversified, right? That's probably where that 13,500 holdings come
right,
from,
yeah,
right?
Yep, yep.
So that's kind of a picture of that. So interestingly, the long-term return was better, but not hugely different. I mean, it was 11.92 to 10.72, right?
Yep. So this is the all stock. So this is all those stock positions in those areas versus the S&P 500.
Yep, both no fixed great. Income. No both fixed great. Income, right? But yeah. Good returns.
Both good returns, but I mean, I'd take the 1.2% extra per year, right?
Who wouldn't? I think there's more to the story, though, and I think that is interesting because, you know, most people look, oh, it's a percent better. And by the way, the 10.72 goes back to that long-term market that you hear people talk about around 10%. So that 49-year period, it was a little over 10. And that'll vary slightly depending on time periods. The risk level, which is the second thing we look at. So all risk level means is how much does it move around? How volatile is it, right? And this isn't a percentage too, which it's a standard deviation number. But anyway, we can get into that in a different, it's kind of a technical, but they're very similar, 17.5 to 17.04. So they're very similar risk. So we didn't have to take on a lot more risk to get that extra 1.2%, right?
That's right.
Just almost
negligible. Yeah, almost the same.
Yeah.
Very same level of risk.
This is the thing that I think is important when you start looking at what diversification can really do for you. So yes, it can add return, but I think this is the more important piece.
Yeah, this part, it's this part is just crazy to me that the S&P, the best 10-year return was 19.21%.
Which is incredible. You think That's about it, you average great. For 10 years, 19.2% a year.
Yep.
Your money's cooking.
And so the globally diversified portfolio's best was 20.9. So
again, better. About a percent, 1.7% higher, the best 10-year period.
Yes.
Yeah.
What about the worst?
This is where I think this is what's really important. And this is going to tie into a couple things. So the worst 10-year period, and by the way, when we say 10-year period, we're going back to 1972. So every single 10-year period going back that far. The worst 10-year period in the S&P 500 was -1.38. So think about that.
Yes.
These are average numbers. These are not total returns. So you lost 1.38% per year for 10 years. That's significant, right?
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's huge.
So this is where we start getting into why that matters because of distributions. So number one, I just want to point out. Go ahead.
Yeah, before you do that, the globally diversified portfolio's worst 10-year period was 4.1. So look, all stock investor that only had a 4.1% return for 10 years, that's not great, but it's a heck of a lot better than losing money 1.38% per year for 10 years.
And extremely important when you're taking distributions. Yes. So let's say you're taking 3 or 4% out per year. At least with that portfolio over the worst 10 years, you treaded water, right?
Yeah.
Your portfolio was the same as it was, or maybe even a little bit more when you started, where you're significantly down on the S&P. So the other couple of quick things, growth of a dollar, this is kind of nuts, and it was a long time, but it's a good point, is that 1.2% difference over those 49 years, this is how much difference it made in the growth of one single dollar. So in 1972, if you started with a dollar, in 2021, March 2021, in the S&P, you had $163. That's crazy.
That's pretty good.
$163 yeah. from one. For the globally diversified portfolio, though, you had $279.
Wow. I mean, that's the power of compounding.
Compounding a small increase. So that's something, too. Brent and I talk all the time about how these a lot of these small little things you can do with planning can have a major impact over long periods of time. That's a great example yes. of that right there. And if you are taking that 4% distribution, here's the, by the way, the 4% distribution is of your account balance each year. So just so you know, that's kind of how that's looked at.
Okay. Yep.
So with the S&P 500, starting with 500,000, if you took 4% out for 49 years, you still had $7.8 million left.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. But not nearly as much as a global portfolio. The global portfolio, still taking out that 4% every year. So number one, you've got a lot more money out.
Yes.
You ended with $57.1 million.
Wow.
Starting with $500,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just such a difference. And one of the things that's so hard, I just want to comment a little bit about how hard diversification can be. So we can look at all these long-term numbers and kind of know, hey, this is the right way to do it. Here's the problem. We don't look at long-term when we're investors. We look at what's happening right now. It's just human nature because fear and greed overrides everything, right? And so the last couple of years when the S&P 500 was a top performing asset, people keep coming back to this, well, that's all you should own.
Right.
Right? But what the thing is, it's statistical noise, like a couple of years with one asset class outperforming others. And so you're like, okay, well, you could say that, and I could see why you would have done better for those few years in a globally diversified portfolio. I mean, I'm sorry, in the S&P 500 versus a globally diversified portfolio. But when you start stretching out the time, it's not close.
No, it's not even in the same ballpark.
So part of good investing is like, right, it's yes. managing your own emotions and having confidence that you're doing the right thing and it will pay off over time.
There's definitely a huge difference. We can see that for sure. And I'm sure listeners are probably wondering, you know, how do I stack up? What does my portfolio look like compared to this? So is there a way for them to find that out?
Well, first of all, we don't want anyone to have portfolio envy, right? We want to make sure that everybody's got the best thing they can have. What we do, we have a tool that we use called the Gap Analysis Report. And really what it does is it takes someone's holdings and it helps them better understand what gaps are in their portfolio. Number one, how diversified are you? What's the cost? You know, do you own different parts of the market compared to what the recommendations are? Value, growth, large, small, all those different things, right? And then the second part of the report kind of shows you historically, like we just talked about, what was the worst return for your mix of assets over 10 years versus the best and comparing it to other alternatives and things. So it's a great tool. We highly recommend for listeners, if you're really not sure about your portfolio, it can be very enlightening, can't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's going to give you clarity and help you achieve the things that are most important to you.
Yep.
This has been a great conversation for sure today, and I think it gives us a clear idea of what diversification truly is and why doing it the correct way with proper diversification can really pay off over the long run. It's a long game, right, with retirement planning, and that's really seen when you look at diversification in your portfolio. So if you want to get in touch with Dan and Brent, over at Avery Wealth, you can do so by logging on to averywealth.com. All of the podcasts that we do are archived there on the website as well. So make sure you check them out, go back through some of our past conversations. They're all kind of evergreen. So no matter when you listen to them, they should provide you with some good information and be very valuable to you in the retirement planning process. But also if you want to call them directly and really look at your portfolio, figure out just how diversified you are, what changes need to be made, you can call them at 517-783-1695. All right, Dan and Brandon, good conversation again. Looking forward to another one in a couple of weeks. So we'll talk to you guys then.
All right. Sounds great, Ben.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified professional before taking any action. Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisory firm.